Welcome back to Feet First. This is a very special episode, a recording of a live podcast that we did on Friday the 16th of January in London with a number of special guests who I will introduce in the main body of this podcast. Just want to take a moment to thank anyone who made it along to support the show and take part in the conversation. It was a really special evening, felt really buzzy and exciting. Definitely going to be planning to do another one of these potentially later on in the year in autumn or again next January. So keep your eyes peeled for announcements regarding that. In other podcast news, we're going to be heading down to Cornwall on Wednesday to cover the Arc of Attrition. Got a number of guests lined up to talk to on the Thursday ahead of race weekend. We'll be publishing a schedule for those podcasts, which we are planning to live stream on Thursday and another one on Friday as well. So head to runfeetfirst.co.uk/live. We'll add all the information there as soon as it's finalized, and you'll be able to watch the live stream on YouTube as well. Got a number of really exciting guests lined up, so hopefully the Cornish Wi-Fi is strong enough to manage a live stream. But bear with us, this is a new project for Feet First, so there may be some teething issues. As ever, thank you to our sponsors, the Centurion Ultra Running Store, Janji, Petzl, and Trail Skin. There'll be links in the show notes of this podcast to all of those brands and the discounts that you can get. So please do make use of them if you find yourself in the need for some new trail running kit. All of those brands have amazing options, and purchasing from them will really help support the show and keep us growing and bringing new events and new coverage to the UK scene, which is what we're really passionate about. So if you need some new kit, look no further than the podcast show notes. All right, here is the recording of Fork in the Trail, a live podcast broadcast from East London. Hello and welcome to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. Coming to you live from the heart of the UK trail running scene, Dalston, East London, with a live audience. My name's Ed Scott. I'm very relieved that the music worked. And in this special episode, I am joined by a live audience here at Salt Salon in Dalston, East London, for Fork in the Trail, a live podcast exploring the past, present, and future of British ultramarathon racing. I'm delighted today to be joined by no less than four special guests who I will introduce in a moment. Before I do, a quick thank you to sponsors of the podcast, Centurion Ultra Running Store, Janji, Petzl, and Trail Skin for supporting the podcast. Towards the end of this episode, we're going to host a Q&A with you guys. Everyone who asks a question will get a Trail Skin multifunctional headwear. And the best question will take home this Swift LT brand new 380 lumen ultra lightweight headlamp. So get thinking about what your questions might be. And I'm going to introduce our panel. First of all, we have James Elson. James, do you want to come on up to the stage by any means necessary? Give it a round for James. James is the founder and director of Centurion Running. Take a seat next to me. Who over the last 15 years have hosted hundreds of ultramarathons in the southeast of England with their South Downs Way 100, now part of the International World Trail Majors. We are very close together. An accomplished ultra runner in his own right, with finishes at Western States, UTMB, The Spine, Tour de Gion, and having represented Great Britain at the European 24-hour championships. Few people have shaped UK ultra running in the past decade more than James. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
I think it's on. We can fade the music down now.
Yeah, no, good, thanks.
Next up, we have Hugh Tibbs. Come on down, Hugh. Give it a round for Hugh. Hugh is an athlete based here in London who has quickly established himself as one of the UK's most competitive ultra runners, particularly on faster runnable courses. Following a breakthrough performance at South Downs Way 100 in 2024, in 2025 he set a new course record at the North Downs Way 50 and Race to the Stones, finished second at South Downs Way 100 and closed out the season with the fastest British trail 100 miler of all time at the Autumn 100. Yeah. Where he ran 13:03.59, which should only ever be referred to as sub 13:04. Hugh, welcome to the podcast.
Very much.
Up next, we have Poppy Collingwood. Poppy, come on down. Poppy is a rising star in the international ultra circuit. In 2025, she came second at the Arc of Attrition 50 and the Julian Alps Trail Run by UTMB, securing her a spot at the UTMB World Series final this year. Based in Bristol, Poppy runs for Kailas Fuga, a well-established brand in China who in recent years have become more well-known in the Western Hemisphere with athletes such as, and forgive me for the pronunciation of these, Jiaoju Zhao, 10th at UTMB, Hao Ha, 8th at Western States, and our very own Tom Joly. Poppy, welcome to the podcast. And last but definitely not least, Marius Otu. Come on up. Based right here in East London, Marius is a member of the Trail Fam racing team. Despite only having been running for 2 years, in that time he secured age category podiums at Maverick Races and the Trans Gran Canaria 5K youth race. That's 5.3K, 127 meters of climbing in 26 minutes. It's pretty rapid. Marius's long-term ambition is to one day podium at that most iconic of races, Western States. Marius, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And just for context, Trail Fam are the UK's only trail running crew for young people. They have a mission of bringing the outdoors and nature to young people through trail running, injecting the kind of colour, energy and attitude into the sport that only the young can bring. They work in schools and community groups, but the race team works with young athletes like Marius to unlock their full potential with coaching, access to performance kit and opportunities to participate in some of the world's most prestigious trail running events. Last year, as I say, the team travelled to Trans Gran Canaria and they also spent an action-packed weekend here in the UK with ultra legend Hayden Hawks. We do have Danny, the founder of Trail Fam, who's in the crowd with us tonight. So big up for Trail Fam. All right, well, we're going to start by setting the scene a little bit. I am going to move this chair because I do feel really close. James, I feel hesitant to refer to you for expertise on the past, but given that 2026 marks 15 years since the inaugural North Downs Way race, start of Centurion Running, I know that the DNA of your events goes back a lot further to your own experiences racing here in the UK and in the USA. So could you kind of set the scene for us as to what the BC, before Centurion era, of British ultra running looked like? And what were you hoping to kind of introduce with your, based on your experiences in the States?
Yeah, so I guess a really much more sparse landscape, first and foremost, much less of a sense of community. And I'm really harking back to kind of 2005, 2006, which is when I entered the scene. First Ultra was January 2006, probably almost exactly 20 years ago. Jesus.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So we bring the cake out now.
Yeah, yeah. And back then, a lot of impetus on the marathon desarb. There were the warriors doing Spartathlon, Pete Foxall, Badwater, Mark Cobain. These are figures that are still around today in various different guises. But you're talking about one or two ultras a month max and them being largely unmarked, unsupported, LDWA-type events and no real... There was depth in racing in some of the road events. You know, London to Brighton was just coming to an end. That was a road race in the guise of Comrades. South Downs 80 had failed and ceased to exist in the mid-90s. So this gap between sort of 95 and 2005, where almost nothing was taking place. So I came in 2006 for the MDS, did a couple of ultras, and then caught the bug, and it sort of went from there. But in 2009, I found myself going to the US to do... supported kind of 100 mile marked races, and I just thought, this is ridiculous, we've got an opportunity to do this here. And it was Henk, who was organizing Caesars Camp at the time, which was one of the only marked 100 mile ultras, who said, let's do the North Downs Way. I've always wanted to. So it was him, Dick at Grand Union Canal Race, and Neil Thibron at XNRG, actually, who really gave me a lot of support in the early days to get that started. But I just wanted to bring that style of racing, and I do mean racing. Like the likes of what, you know, Hugh's done at events over the last year, is we're hugely passionate about that. But also an opportunity for people at the back to complete these things in an environment that didn't require intense navigation through the night and a whole raft of other skill sets. And I think we weren't the first, but we were certainly at the vanguard of it. And it feels like now we're just light years away from that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the sport has come a very long way since those early years. particularly the international scene, which we'll come on to, which is professionalized substantially. I know that you have a personal soft spot for kind of grassroots trail running, flapjack and cups of tea kind of stuff. What do you think has gotten better in the time that Centurion's been operating in the UK in particular? And is there anything you think we may be at risk of losing?
I mean, safety is the number one thing. We never had a clue. Even when we started out, we'd never clue where people were. I mean, most people weren't carrying mobile phones or mandatory kit. They just weren't things. Certainly not trackers. And so, you know, a wet bit of paper that's filled in with rough bib numbers and scribbles, like Grand Union still carry that over. They still tweet those things out. Obviously, they now have trackers, but that is what it was. And so there are stories of Dick still trying to get hold of people 2 days off the end of Grand Union, see if they're all right, like they hadn't arrived home. So safety, first and foremost, peace of mind for organisers that you know where people are and that they're safe, or at least you know where they are. Level of competition, I mean, obviously things are skyrocketing in the space. What's exciting is what these elite athletes are achieving. And the way that they're pushing it and the speed they're pushing it at. And it's incredible to think back not that long ago to what was seen as like the benchmark, the top tier, and where things are going now. I mean, as a fan of the sport, it's just the best. So mainly safety, but also competition and general progress. You know, from front to back, people are generally achieving things they never thought possible. Long may it continue.
Well, let's come on to that. Hugh, you came on the podcast before and you said that you're still a kid in a sweet shop when it comes to races. I think you must be a very hungry kid because in 2025, you ran the Arc of Attrition 100, third place, London Marathon 2:31, North Downsway 50 course record, South Downsway 100 second place, Race to the Stones course record, Grand Raid Pyrenees, DNF, Autumn 100 national record, sub 13:04, the Turin Marathon 2:26, and you rounded it out with Hurtwood 50K, and the Crystal Palace Fun Runners 3 kilometre Dino Dash Relay, where you cunningly ran in leg three to avoid having to face me, mano a mano. Given you're still relatively new to Ultra Trail, I'm curious to get kind of a pulse check from you based on your experiences in 2025. You ran events from big international organisers like UTMB through to more medium-sized events down to really the grassroots level. What are your takeaways from the year? As an athlete, what got you thinking, I want some more of this?
I thought you were going to say the big event, Dino Dash. But yeah.
Mostly we're going to talk about Dino Dash today.
Main takeaways, I think it's been a year since I did the ARC 2025, which obviously right at the beginning of the year. It seems like a lot longer than that, I would say. It's crazy how much I've learned in the last year running. And I think that schedule sounds pretty great. Hearing it back now sounds kind of scary that I did that. But I think I learned a lot in those events. So I think one of the takeaways was, like, if you're quite new to it, sort of get stuck in, because you will learn a lot. I was looking at my plan for Arc of Attrition last year, because I'm running it next week. And my nutrition plan, I'm going to do it completely different this time, just because I've so much I've learned from the last year about, you know, what works and what doesn't work. So that's definitely, yeah, I think I've learned a lot, and I've done a variety of different races, and I've kind of learned what my strengths and weaknesses are. So I think that's helped a lot. In terms of what makes me come back for more, I think it's the uncertainty of outcome of these longer races, which I find very appealing. So if I did like a road marathon, I would know, like, if the race went well, within a couple of minutes what time I'd get. But I think for these longer races, like next week doing the ARC 100 miles, like a winter 100 mile coastal event, if it goes well, I have no idea what time I'll get. So I think that's really exciting, the prospects, not knowing even if I'll finish the race. So I think that's quite an addictive thing about ultra running. And there's so many different variables which will determine that outcome. I see it as, like, there's loads of different ways you can improve as well, because, like, you might have the same fitness levels as a year ago. Even you might have been injured and you maybe couldn't improve your fitness, but there's other areas you can improve, like your pacing, you learn nutrition and stuff like that. So I think the scope for improving is much larger than in, like, shorter distance races, and I think that's quite appealing as well.
And I know you're quite an experienced road athlete with the marathon times, obviously, to back that up. As a participant, you've not really left that world behind. What do you think road race organizers do better than trail and vice versa?
Yeah, I think it's difficult because the obviously the numbers of participants in these races is so different. And I mean, the environment's very different. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily one could learn from the other. Like, obviously, in trail events, the aid stations are much better than in the road races. But I don't think they would work in like a road marathon if you had the trail sort of set up. But it's difficult. Like my background mostly in road running is these big sort of big city marathons. Like me and my friends used to go to like combine like a marathon with a holiday. And it's like, I guess I don't want to say like necessarily generic, but you go for a very like the process of going to the expo where it's very commercial, very brand heavy. Then when you get to the start line, you're put into the starting pen. It feels like you're kind of like a cog in the machine a little bit. And then when you finish, you get funneled to like get your medal and stuff. I think the difference between the road race I've done and trail is trail feels a bit more intimate and a bit more personal, a personalized kind of race. And definitely in those bigger road events, like, yeah, no one goes to those like wanting to meet people. It's quite a different experience. And then on like a more of a local sort of level, I think, at least in London, it seems like there's these grassroots kind of athletic club based races where there is much more of a community, but it's maybe more based around the sort of athletic club rather than the race. And then I guess the road scene in London, I think you're increasingly seeing, you know, companies like Run Through organizing like races where you maybe doing like loops of a park and they'll be putting on the same race every month, maybe. I think that's good in some ways and that is probably more accessible than some of the other races. But I think in trail, you see more. You don't really see that as much. You see more, it's more variety. So maybe you've got a bigger variety of companies offering, maybe they'll be doing event once a year. So you don't see these like repeat events. So I think often looking at the trail races, it can be a bit more inspiring than the road ones.
The route is kind of more of a character in the
race. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Poppy, I'd like to come on to you. You've raced a lot here in the UK, particularly in the Southwest where you're based. Last year, you made this international splash at the Julian Alps race by UTMB in Slovenia, which I highly encourage people to check out because it looks spectacular. The subject of UTMB and its role in the sport is something we'll come back to, but putting that to one side, what was your experience kind of stepping up onto that international stage, having had a lot of success here in more local races?
I think it's hard, or I suppose I absolutely loved it. Completely back what you say, definitely go to Slovenia. I won a 2-hour session in the sauna, so if anyone goes, hit me up because I can give you that voucher because I'm not going back. No, I will go back eventually, but not within the year. But I loved going to the international stage just due to the competition, and I suppose we will end up touching about it later, but the level of competition is obviously a lot bigger at these UTMB races and one similar to that, and that is what I really, really enjoyed, because I love going to local races, like really, really local ones, like Cheddar Gorge or whatever. So I'm from Bristol, and that's great. And this is going to sound really big-headed, but I'm just going to say it anyway. If I go in there and I'll probably win. It doesn't give me that sort of joy. You'd think, oh yeah, you win, but it doesn't. I don't push myself as much. And I definitely said this in the last podcast, but so competition, the origins of competition means better together. And I absolutely stand by that. So when you're racing with other people who are just in front of you or just behind you, I push myself so much more because I'm petrified that they're going to catch me up, or I really want to catch up the person in front of me. And with those international races, yeah, you just have that competition and you have that sense of achievement, which makes me want to go back because I've got a very addictive personality. So yeah, I think it's just the competition and there's still that spirit, I feel. There's obviously an element when you get really big with that sort of community that you were talking about before. When it gets really big, you slightly lose that, like, we're going to make best buds at this event, but everyone in trail running is just so friendly because they're there and they care about the outside because they love running outdoors, and that I just is still there within the big races, so I still enjoy it.
Well, let's stay on that. Marius, you're relatively new to trail running. You've only been running for a couple of years. When you think back to that first time that you were sort of introduced to it as a sport and think about what he's talking about, the spirit of it, what do you think kind of captivated you? What got you thinking, this is the sport for me?
Well, I think what captivated me was, like, well, I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, I've always liked the outdoors and I've always liked running. So I think when you put them together, it kind of makes like a superpower in a way to have.
And did you find yourself discovering places on your doorstep or further afield with Mr. Stokes that you'd never seen before, that unlocking new places?
Especially when I started, I never knew that you could wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with a big backpack and run, 50 miles or 100 miles. And I think that, I mean, wait. I can't remember the first time I did a Maverick race, but I realised,
you have the audience in the palm of your hand. We're on tenterhooks.
Can you ask me the question, please?
Well, I was going to ask about that, because obviously you've progressed, you've improved in running, you're starting to race competitively. And I want to talk about this subject of competition. Thinking about what Poppy was just saying about it kind of pushing you, what is it about competitive running rather than just, you know, going for a run in the woods? What is it that you like about the competitive side?
What I like about the competitiveness is that you always have, like you said, you always got people in front of you and behind you. Like, I've never been in a race where I'm like ahead, I'm like, okay, I can chill out. It's always like, oh my god, they're gonna catch me, or they're just in front of me, I need to go catch them. And we've been to a couple of like cross-country races a bit outside London, and you're there, I'm like the only coloured guy there with a bunch of other white kids, and then you're like, oh my god, they're born in the mountains, they're gonna smoke me. And then you go out, you're sprinting out, and you're like, you just get in your mind and you're like, right, I need to do this, and I just need to get it done.
Nice one. Yeah. Show these kids who's boss.
Yeah.
Well, Poppy, I know competition, as you've talked about, is something that's important to you. It's not necessarily something that kind of gels with the stereotypical British, reserved, even cynical, potentially, image. So putting injury aside, what is it about the competitive side of the sport that holds such power for you? I mean, you've kind of touched upon it already, I suppose, but could you maybe unpack that a bit more, thinking about the context of the races you ran last year? Like in Julian Alps, I know that the competitive side was pretty urgent, right? There was a section where you were on a bike path for like 10K, being like having to motor down this trail. Could you just talk a bit about like bringing that to life in the race itself?
I think, so for context, so in the Julian Alps, absolutely stunning. You've got a small mountain and then a bit of flat, another small mountain, a bit of flat, a massive mountain, and then about 30 kilometres of downhill. And then they decided to chuck in right at the end about 15K of flat on the cycle path, which was hell. Absolute hell. And that, so I was, I knew that the first lady, when I was just about to get to that flat bit, I knew that the first lady was throwing up everywhere. And I thought, yes. And then she is absolutely incredible. And we still keep in touch. But in my head, I thought, this is great. I've got this. And I was all in cloud nine. And then suddenly it just hit and my tummy went all funny. And which is good, because in trail running and ultra races, things go wrong and you have to kind of get used to it, as I'm sure you know.
Something's on this bike path. Everyone's going.
Oh yeah. Well, it's because I love the up and down. I love the ups because you can walk. I love the down because you go fast. The flat is just pounding on your legs. And I think with that competition, so I thought, yes, I've got this. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna see her around every corner. I didn't, because I was having such a bad time, and
piles of sick.
Yeah. But that competition side, it makes it, you push yourself so much more, you find your limit so much more. If I knew I was in first place and I knew the second person was miles behind, I would have chillaxed, and I probably wouldn't have had all those GI issues and got to the finish a bit later on. But the fact that I knew that she was just there in my head, even though she had gone on quite far, meant that when I was on the cycle path in the worst pit I've ever been in, crying, and Harry was there, my partner was there at the checkpoint, and I was like, oh, is this a checkpoint? Because I was just desperate to see someone, and because I was on my own. But I run-walked for that whole time, and I wouldn't have pushed myself if I didn't have that competition. And that is one of my proudest races, because I got to that really low point. I kept pushing as much as I can, listened to my body so I didn't pass out, and got to the finish. And it was so nice to see the competition at the end, because it's that shift of, in the race, I need to beat her and just see her as a competitor. But at the end, you have that kind of connection with going through that same interesting, varied experience with that person technically. And it kind of brings you closer. And yeah, I love it. It's really fun.
Hugh, a lot of your standout performances, thinking about it this year, have been defined by close competition with one or two other athletes. North Downs Way 50, you finished less than 2 minutes ahead of Benjamin Hall, and actually only just 90 minutes ahead of me, actually, at that rate. Race to the Stones, Joe Turner was kind of hot on your heels for the first sort of three quarters of that race. The fact that you've also had a couple of second place finishes too kind of suggests you really are pushing for that competitive edge. How important is that competitive side to you on the trails?
It's very important, I think, in terms of getting the most out of yourself, which I think ultimately everyone wants to do in some form. So, yeah, I think, for example, in the Autumn 100, I set kind of like a time goal. So I was thinking like 13 hours would be great to get under that. And I think you can kind of try and go for a certain time or a course record. But I think ultimately, like when it comes to being really hard, I don't think that's like often enough to really push yourself to your limit. So like in the Autumn 100, maybe I knew I was close to 13 hours, but I think if like Callum was still in the race and I like turned around and I saw his head torch in the background, I think I might have been able to push myself a little bit harder. But you know, when you're feeling sick and it's just like 13 hours, it's just the time that I've just kind of made up in my head. It doesn't really necessarily mean anything. So I think, yeah, I think having people around you is the best way. So either getting chased, I mean, I think getting chased is horrendous. It was in the North Downs Way, there's only maybe half an hour where I was in that situation. I was mostly chasing, and I much prefer that. I think psychologically it's much easier. So, but yeah, I've come second a couple of times as well. And, I think not just in the race, but I think running against people who were better than you or are better than you is also quite a inspiring thing as well. And it kind of motivates you. It's like one thing seeing people on the TV run incredible times, but when you're in a race and someone's for example, in the South Downs Way 100, seeing Mark run up all the hills when I was hiking up a lot of them, it kind of, seeing that in person, you kind of see what is required to improve, and it kind of can be quite motivational for now I know next year he's doing that race again. God damn it. So I know that if I'm going to beat him, I've got to get better at running uphill, or at least a little bit better at running uphill. So it can be, I think running against people who are better can be quite inspiring as well. It's not just in the race itself.
I want to talk about Mark Derbyshire, just generally, but particularly in this context, James, because obviously he ran this incredible time, 13:42. It's a phenomenal time. But the course record that he took down only was, 2014? It was 11 years old. So have people gotten faster, or are we sort of in this delusion where we feel like they are, but when you think about Mark Perkins 2014 running 14:03 or whatever it was, has anything really changed?
Yeah, though things have definitely changed. I mean, but if you look at a lot of the historic records, I mean, Mathieu Bon taking Yannis's 48-hour last year, I mean, there's still a lot of legacy performances out there. If you look at the top 10 all-time British road and track races, most of them are still from the late 70s. Yeah. So it's more of the focus shifting unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, where the money's gone, which is into big mountain, highly competitive trail races. And therefore, athletes necessarily at that end of things are chasing those targets. Well, I mean, look at Alexander. He ran 100K world record with us, 100-mile world record with us, was still buying his own trainers. And yet you've got athletes performing at a much lower level in the big mountains and scooping annual contracts with sponsors. So that has kind of dictated where things have gone. If I look at Mark's was a standalone. I mean, his course record before Hugh and Mark came along stood by, I mean, I'm trying to think, Drew, when someone last went under 15 hours at South Downs 100, let alone, you know, got within half a minute, a mile of Mark's time. Also, if we're being brutally honest, Mark's course was a little shorter. We started at a different venue back then. I had a very interesting conversation with Damo on Tuesday about where course records should stand because of diversions after stuff at the Spine last week. My feeling is always we should try and hold the course records, but we shouldn't put too much on them because there are always nuances. Diversions being the main one, or different aid station locations, rules around crewing, all that kind of stuff factors in. Arc 50 now, no crew. First year we did Arc 50 in the first year. Drew crewed us to within an inch of our lives. Now, I'm not saying we were ultimately that competitive on the time scale of things versus Tom's 2025 time, but things change, things evolve. I think we've moved on a lot, but it varies greatly between the disciplines.
You're echoing a sentiment that I heard Jim Wormsley espouse on the Single Track podcast around course records, where he's talking about maybe not giving them too much credence because a race will change every year. You know, certainly a race like UTMB, people don't really think too much about course records. Poppy, conscious that you're sat next to a man with a lot of course records, are course records still relevant here in the UK, do you think? Do you pay them much credence?
I think when, personally, if you'd get a course record, well, definitely. But then if...
if you don't know.
Well, yeah, no. Well, obviously, it's a nice little cherry on top if you do end up winning a race and you get a course record. It's, yeah, icing on the cake. But I think course records, as James was saying, need to be taken with a pinch of salt. For example, the Spine that is, still, I suppose, still going on. The conditions are so... can really, really affect the course and the time that you run it in. I know Jack Scott, he's been comparing online about his times this year compared to last year, and I'd say most of that is due to the fact that I don't think for any second that he's lost any fitness. I think it's the conditions are so completely different. And I think for that reason, course records, someone might, there's like an element of luck. Obviously, I appreciate you work very hard. I am not saying
you're lucky.
Yeah,
lucky
you've been thing. Lucky with the Irish. I think it's an element of you could be at the top of your game, but you could have just had a bit of a rough card.
Can we swear?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. you're going to be effing and jeffing.
Yeah,
you could have just be dealt, could have been dealt a shitty hand and essentially not get that course record, even though you could have been the fittest person on that course over the past couple of years just because of the weather.
I completely agree. I spoke to Mark in the toilet, he was in the toilet in Malham on Sunday.
Where were you?
Sunday morning, at home. Mark is a man who likes to message a lot, who those who know him well will know. And his reaction was to stupid race, I'm doing a hot race next year. I know he'll probably listen back to this and be like, oh. And I said, just you can't chase a gym man course record when the conditions are like that. You're looking for a 1 in 10 year. Jack's year, not Jasmine's, by the way, but Jack's was a 1 in 10 year at the Spine. And he goes, totally agree, I'm going to do something warm next year, like Trans Gran Canaria or whatever. The next day he's going, so which spikes do I need? Because those yak tracks really didn't do it. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, that course record's got to go. And I'm just like, well, if you want to gamble on it each time, and every time they pull out Penny Ghent, and now it's a different finish location, and there's always a big asterisk, but it is still a big draw. There's no doubt.
Marius, one race that course records mean a lot at is Western States, which I know is a race you're obsessed by and interested by. What is it about that race in particular that kind of captivated your attention when you found out about it?
What captivated me was that, as all the races I've done was either like flat, fieldy, foresty, then you got Western State, which is prestigious, fast, extremely competitive, and it's like, it's deserty. And then it's just so quick.
It's not a climate you see here in the UK, is
it? No, it's not. Yeah. And then also, I think also is that you get a lot of, you get a lot of runners that come, and then it's like the same bunch of elite runners that come back.
Yeah.
And then you really get to see like who's the top and who's been dominating at Western States year on year on year.
It's got that legacy piece to it.
Yeah.
I know one runner who's done really well at Western States many times is Hayden Hawkes, who you spent a bit of time with last year. What were your takeaways from the time you spent with Hayden? What did he teach you? What did he tell you?
Well,
I know someone in Trail Fam got his shoes, which is pretty cool.
Danny's got them on now, hasn't he?
But what did you learn from Hayden?
I learned that he's really fast.
Yep. He actually finished Western States. He was only 9.5 hours ahead of me, actually.
Really?
Was he fast uphill, downhill, both?
Yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what? I'm trying to think.
There's a segment on Strava in Tring in Hertfordshire where like Ivanhoe Beacon is, which Hayden Hawkes shares the title on it because he did some demo with Hoka or something. Do you know who he shares the title with?
You?
Yeah. Thank you.
That wasn't a hard one to get right.
The difference is he was probably jogging. I was going all out.
Do you check it every day?
Yeah.
Before going to bed.
He's over again this summer, right? So maybe we should take him to Tring.
Yeah. Showdown. But what was it just like spending time with an athlete who was at that level, that internationally competitive level?
It was really nice to like see, because it was the first time I'd seen like an elite runner, actually. So then, and it was really good to see like the difference between a professional ultra runner and then a marathon runner that you'll see on TV. And you really see how much of a difference it is as, I mean, of course, you got the distance and then them, like what, how they act, how they run, what they wear. So yeah, it was really cool to see like just the personality of someone of that level acts and behaves.
He's got a great mustache as well. Well, Hugh, I know that with your success at the ARC, you've earned yourself a spot at UTMB in 2026, but I know you've talked about Western States as potentially a target in the sort of medium to long-term future. When you think about this next phase of your career with the success you've had in the UK in 2025 and you're sort of maybe stepping up to that international level, where does the UK scene kind of sit in relation to those ambitions, I guess?
This year, quite central. I've got 4 races for the first half of the year. So the ARC next week. Then I'm going to go into the road 100K scene. So I'm doing ACP.
Joe Turner again.
Luckily enough, been picked for the England team. So, by the way, you know, Race to the Stones first 1-2 for both men and women, all in the England team. I think it's like a feeder event.
Sophie Power and
Fiona Cook.
Fiona Cook. There we go.
Yeah, so it's a feeder event for the ACP.
Yeah,
clearly. And then into the after that South Downs Way 50 and South Downs Way 100. And then I'm kind of keeping the second half of the year open. I'm probably actually not going to take my place at the UTMB because the 100K World Road Championship's been announced for just 3 weeks after. So my dream would be to get a spot for Team GB in that. So UTMB is like over €500 to enter. So I'm not, on the off chance I'll get in Team GB, I think I'll leave UTMB this year and then either do the if I'm lucky enough to get into Team GB, do the World Championships, or if not, there's the Vietnam Mountain Marathon, which is part of the World Trail Majors. So I think I'm probably not going to do South Downs Way next year. I think four years in a row might be too much. So I figure now this year is a good year to target like World Trail Majors and try and do a second one of those events. And the Vietnam race in Sapa is a really beautiful part of the world, which I've been to before. I'd like to go back, so I figure like that would be my kind of other option. and then hope to and then maybe look at Western States golden ticket type races to have a go at that. But I mean, the standard's so high,
it's insane
these days. Yeah, I wouldn't bank too much on like getting that. But yeah, hopefully if I do well in the arc next week, I'll have the option to go to UTMB the following year. But it's a race I want to do, for sure. But it's not like head and shoulders above the rest for me. And I think opportunity to represent your country, you know, I think whilst I'm still in my 30s, I want to try and do the faster stuff. As I've only got a couple of years left before I'll probably start to get a bit slower.
Cheers, mate. I'd like to talk about World Trail Maids, actually, because you know, you raced South Under 100 this year, you raced Grand Raid Pyrenees, it didn't go your way that time, but they're both World Trail Maids events. For context, James, as one of the people on the board at World Trail Majors, you could introduce what that series is, what it's trying to achieve, and what you hope that the appeal is, I guess, for athletes.
Yeah, sure. How many people here have heard of World Trail Majors? Oh, good. Some of you haven't. So basically, there was something that existed pre-UTMB Ironman merge, buyout, whatever you want to call it, called Ultra Trail World Tour, which involved a bunch of the globe's biggest independent races, really cool locations, amazing courses, generally quite large fields, international level competition. And when UTMB, Ironman bought half of UTMB essentially, they then started buying, or you know, approaching races to buy them into the series that now makes up obviously the UTMB series of events, which is 60, 70 strong now. Well, there are a bunch of those independent races that turned down that opportunity. They wanted to remain independent, authentic, true to their values, hold their own philosophies at their heart. And they instead got together, and there were six or seven of them left over. So Trans Gran Canaria, Hong Kong 100K, Madeira Island Ultra Trail, one of the Araviper Rents Black Canyon 100K. Who am I forgetting? Ultra Trail Cape Town. Some big, big, big events. And wanted to add a few more to the collection to make it kind of global and get in some territories they weren't in, which is where we got invited in. And so we were 12, we're now 10, soon to be, spoiler alert, likely one or two more again, races that hold those values true. So we're independently run, we have a shared sort of philosophy, but we're completely democratically organised. So we had a meeting yesterday. They go on a long time. When you're translating into Spanish, Japanese is always tricky. You know, various other languages on the way around, it can be hard to convey values. But I can't tell you what it means as an organiser to get the feedback of Chiba-san, who's the RD at Mount Fuji 100. He just comes from a completely different angle, a different cultural set of cultural principles, a different way of conducting business. Yesterday we were talking about samurai's honor, where we, you know, you have to execute things with a certain, you might make a difficult decision, but you do it with honor to the person who you're about to kill. But similarly, Shiba-san's out talking about female participation in events, providing breastfeeding facilities at checkpoints. Mind blown. Like, not something that would ever be spoken about in their environment, culturally. You know, kind of a taboo thing. Like, could not believe that was something we'd actually factored into our events, let alone, you know, women making use of the facilities. And so there's conversation. You feel like, you know, we're one of the smaller fish in the pond, but actually, if you share, they're two quite extreme examples, granted, but we're sharing these things across network that are just so amazing. And it's not all unicorns and rainbows. There are hard yards in there, but generally we're trying to hold this independent series that offers value to the elite end, offers everybody the opportunity to participate in a kind of more sustainable way. So two events count towards the series each year. There's a long series and a short series. So for us, it's South Downsway 100, South Downsway 50K. Run one more, as Hugh will, Vietnam Mountain Marathon, eligible for the overall prizes and the competition as a whole. It's just an alternative at the moment. There is a long way to go, but we will persevere. So,
and Caleb Olsen was the men's winner this year.
Yeah, so Caleb won, obviously, Western, but he'd previously won Trans Gran Canaria, and then he flew out to Australia and won GPT 100. Like, with all respect to Grampian Peak Trail 100, you are not attracting Caleb Olsen unless you're part of the World Trail Major Series. So we all lift, you know, rising tide raises all boats is definitely the case. And it's very good dare I say it, of races like Trans Grand Canaria and Fuji to offer some of our slightly smaller events the opportunity to gain much more prestige and profile.
Poppy, when you've been on the podcast before, we've talked about kind of what motivates you as an athlete to choose races, choose international races, and it feels like you're on the cusp of this. Injury aside, we haven't acknowledged Poppy's giant boot, but obviously injured. You're on a really cusp of like a really formative 5 to 10 years in your career. Someone like Jim Walmsley or Katie Scheid, they can kind of, or Caleb Olsen, feels like they can kind of show up at a race and the story follows them. Whereas someone who's working their way up to that level perhaps is a bit more dictated by contracts, media, just generally having to do certain races. How much pressure do you feel to sort of target certain races when you're planning your calendar?
I think so. In a standard year, obviously my year has been a bit turned upside down with my leg at the moment. But in a standard year, there is... I wouldn't say it's pressure because I don't feel like anyone's strong-arming me into making a certain decision, but there is that financial benefit of doing, say, the UTMB races, because then I could get bonuses from my contract and I can go on a nice holiday. And so there's an element there. I think it's not also just... it's just not all about the money. It's also about the competition. So as I was alluding to before, the... sometimes in the local races, I don't feel like I get that competition. I don't push myself. Whereas if I go to those bigger races, which do get more media attention, everything like that, then I can get that competition and push myself. And whilst I'm still new, I haven't properly found my limits. And going to those races where I do have that competition, I think will just help me find those limits a bit more.
I want to do a quick poll, but by show of hands, how many people have had at some point in the last few days the spine tracker up on their phone or desktop? Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. James, the spine is kind of one of the only races, certainly one of the only independent UK races that really gets that global attention every year. Why do you think that is? And do you think in the next few years we'll see other races joining its ranks?
I mean... it is because it captures the imagination. I mean, first it goes on so long that you end up... I'm talking for myself. Don't know if everyone's the same. You're watching those dots. You're living... Yeah, Ali's just finished. Like, you're living... you are living it with them. I've found this year that I've been way more involved than most years because I'm not either running it myself or preparing for the arc. And that's the first time since 2019 that that's the case, apart from COVID, where we were worried about... much different things. So I've been able to sort of invest in it, and I feel so passionately about the runners that are out there and the things that are going through. You might see glimpses of them in the photos and the media. I just think it captures the imagination and the spirit of adventure at a time of year when there's really nothing else to watch. You know, I'm an American football fan, so I've got the playoffs each weekend, but in between it's boring, so you know, I'm watching the spine tracker. For me as well, being part of our community, there are so many Centurion athletes on. There's so many people I know that we're from. I know lots of people in this room who are the same, coached athletes, friends, whatever. But the stories at the front, they write themselves. What is Eugenie doing? What is
he up to?
I
really enjoyed your commentary over the week of basically how much...
the man just needs a... yeah. Anyway.
You called it, didn't you?
I did call it. I wasn't the only one. No, props to Eugenie. Please come back again. There are stories every turn, and just when you think everything's like, you know, the lady last night, the Antilla, the Johannes Antilla, the Finnish runner, she binned it on the top of the last hill. And I was like, bed symbol, Damo's at Kirk Yetten. What's happening? We don't know. We're trying to find out. Oh, Mountain Rescue are going out. She's in a bivy bag. Oh, my God. She's 9 miles from the end. You know, you've lived this woman's journey. You've seen her in all the video, and she's binned it 9 miles from the finish. And you're just like, oh, my God. But that's the spine. Like, you cannot appreciate how utterly miserable and horrendous that race is until you've been in it. But it's absolutely brilliant. So I think it just captivates. Will other UK independent races achieve that level of cut through? Probably not, just through congestion, I would think. I mean, the spine's not even a very competitive race. Seb has won the race this year in 96 hours. I mean, that is awful.
In a bin bag.
And Anna in 106, in a bin bag. I was sad it wasn't an animal feed sack. I know that's pathetic, but I thought he grabbed it off some farm anyway.
It's a bit of an aside, but the company that made that bin bag posted it to their Instagram.
I was zooming in, looking at
I'm contacting them about sponsorship.
Yeah, we should stock that in the shop as well. But not really a competitive rat. I'm sorry to all those that have competed at the Spine, the few of them, but it's not. It's something else that makes it magic. Whereas actually now, even with the Arc next week, it'll be all about the rat. Sure, the conditions will be horrendous and that adds spice, but it's still a race, a pure race, you know. I don't see it happening for other races. I think the Spine caught something magic. They've turned it into something magic. Fair play to Phil. He's really turned it into something pretty special.
I want to move on from the subject of competition and racing to talk a bit about community. But before I do, I just wanted to get a sense of, are there races that are a bit off the beaten track, Hugh and Poppy and Marius, that are kind of on your radar, like something you might want to do that's just a bit out there? Are we going to see you at, I don't know, the Spine or?
Not the Spine.
No.
Not anytime soon. Maybe in 5 years or so. But yeah, that I just can't get my head around that. It's like a different sport, isn't it? Longer distance stuff. I think I'm quite talking about course records and stuff. I quite fancy like a couple of the low key events in the UK which have got really impressive course records, like Grand Union Canal, yes. Dan Lawson. Yeah, so I want to do that
we
one.
We have the course record holder in the room with us, right? Oh, the other canal race. Sorry.
Yeah. So that one, I think, like, just doing a record which, like, yeah, 10 years old, no one's got that close to it, just with much better shoes, seems quite appealing. And West Highland Way as well. I think that time, that record's, the men's record there is really, I can't remember the guy's name, Rob Sinclair, mate? Yeah. That time's looks really good. Yeah. I quite fancy that. Vanguard. Do people know the Vanguard Way?
Yes, we love the Vanguard Way.
Is there a race on the Vanguard Way?
No. Well, there are some on the, but maybe not the whole one. But I quite fancy going for the FKT for that. I've done it before. It was like my first like longer walk run. I think
Start at East Croydon, which is the perfect place to start because you're so happy to leave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've done it before. I did it about 14 hours for the self-supported one. Didn't bother submitting it, but I want to have another go. Take a few hours off that. I reckon I'd get maybe under nine. Nice. Try that.
Poppy, any strange out there races that you're sort of thinking I'd like to give that a go?
So I think, and please don't take this in any offence, but as I'm still young and I'm still new in the sport, but I've only just like skimmed the surface. There's any race is a new race for me, other than the Arc that I've done a couple of times. I feel like I get into a bit of an obsession about a race. I will probably go back to Slovenia at some point because I love it so much, but then that means that I love all of them. Like, if I love every single race, then surely maybe not the Spine. The Spine maybe when I'm a bit older, but just any new race
in a sweet shop,
and it just explore a new area. That's the best thing about all these races. You get to explore completely different new areas and trails. You get fed along the way, you get clapped in at the end, and you get a medal. So I just think it's great. Any and all, really.
Marius, apart from Western States, are there races you're thinking I'd love to give that a go one day?
Well, currently right now I just do whatever Mr. Stokes throws at me. Oh yeah, try that.
Get him in the Spine.
But when I'm older, you know, I do not yet like comprehend about what you actually go through when you do an ultra because I've never done it before. So I wonder everything. So then I don't. Yeah, I just wonder everything.
Yeah.
Then it'll be like I'll be tracking a race and, like you were saying, some guy will DNF 10 miles from finish, and I'll be like, wow, well, I've done that. You've just done 150 miles. I'm sure you'll be fine to just call it. Then I'm like. 10 miles could be like 4 hours, could be 5 hours. Yeah. So then I want to do everything, then I've got no insight about what really happens.
It's exciting to see where you'll go. I want to talk a bit about community, which I know, Maris, is really important to you guys at Trail Fam. Obviously, they've supported you on the racing side, but it's more than just a training group. So could you just tell us a bit about what that community means for you and Has it helped you outside of running in other aspects of your life?
Yes, because a lot of the kids that do it, I'm really good friends with them, and I knew them before, but I feel like if I didn't do trail, I wouldn't really know them as close as I do now. I mean, we've got, there's like 20 of us, but there's like 10 of them that I really like enjoy to speak to. Well, yeah, they're all fine, but there's 10 that I really know, and then it means a lot to me because I know them, and it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, it's outside of running, yeah, we do training, but then outside at break, I see them, and they're my top 10 friends, and I see them, and it's kind of like, it's
sort of
like,
giving you that sense of community.
Yeah. 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 Yes.
Top 10. Who's number one?
Mr. Stokes.
Yeah. And when you think about particularly some of the challenges that people of your generation are facing with technology and social media and things like that, do you think a lot of young people generally are maybe searching for that sense of community that trail running and trail fam has helped you find?
Yeah, I do. But it's kind of, especially in London, it's all about football. So... And even if you do running, that's a bit odd. Now, trail running is like, there's got to be some sort of problem going on. So I feel like it's not a thing that kids will see online. Like, they will see, like, football clips. You're not going to see Tom Evans coming in at UTMB. You're not going to see that. So I feel like it's not, especially in London, the kids, it's not, they've not been exposed to that, like, seeing it online, people doing it, because you have a lot of runners, but you don't have any trail runners really in London. You have a lot, do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just imagining a world where instead of a football pitch, every school has like a wood with a trail. Yeah. That would be cool. I know that this is a bit of an aside, James, but I know that the Football Association does quite a lot of work supporting grassroots football here in the UK. Do you foresee a world where the Trail Running Association or the International Trail Running Association plays a more active role in sort of shaping the direction of the sport, rather than at the moment it feels that's sort of up to private organisations ultimately, like the UTMBs of this world?
I should probably say what those two things are, I guess, for context. So the TRA, which I'm currently the chair of, is the Trail Running Association. So we're a volunteer organisation, basically affiliated to England Athletics to oversee the licensing and management of trail running in England specifically. So Scotland and Welsh Athletics have their own departments. So we license events, we give financial aid to organisers and various bits back to our membership, and provide championship races, which some athletes win. So we are here to try and help organisers steer the sport in the right direction and provide them support for it. But it's very chicken and egg. We all know how deeply UKA, British Athletics, are struggling for funding. We've had to defund a lot of our international teams and athletes in whole disciplines, including, you know, the sport we love. It needs to kind of spiral up in the right direction. There's a lot of people working behind the scenes to kind of reinforce the sport, reinvigorate it. There's a brand new edition of the Mountain Trail Strategy Group coming. We are all responsible for trying to drive the sport in the right direction, but we are fighting an impossible tide. When you're dealing with the kind of money that there is in the sport these days, we aren't gonna influence it massively, I'm afraid. More of an issue, and this is probably coming down the line as something myself and Sam at Ultra X, you'll see in the corner, we were at ASEC conference in November talking about on a panel, was just the link between some of the bigger organisations and World Athletics and how they partner up on positive things like anti-doping and sport regulation, but also then the money has an influence on the governing, the governance of the sport. And ITRA, International Trail Running Association, are very much in kind of our wheelhouse of trying to steer the sport in the right direction in a kind of not-for-profit way. But we aren't going to win a battle. There's no battle to be won, to be fair, but we aren't going to win against that. We've just got to continue to fight our corner and try and encourage these bigger races and runners to uphold the values of the sport and do things in a way that sort of creates fair value for everybody. So I am an advocate for the grassroots level of sport. I don't have an issue with everything that I see, but some of the direction of travel is of concern. And I really don't know where we're going to be in 5 years. That's my biggest concern, is we don't really know where we're headed. There's an awful lot of charging off in a lot of different directions, and some of them will be harmful and others less so, and others will be tremendously positive. It's not really clear which is which at the moment.
If we stay on this subject of community, Poppy, I just had Sophie Grant, who just finished the Spine, or maybe yesterday, had her on the podcast ahead of the Spine, and she's raced internationally. She's run Tour de Gion, she's run UTMB. But one of the things she said she was really excited about was this feeling of coming home, this feeling of the sense of community that the Spine in particular has, but it does feel like smaller events generally have, as you said, over bigger ones. So as you grow and sort of develop in your career, how much are you thinking about staying in touch with that sense of community? How are you navigating that as you rightly seek out, you know, the best opportunities for you as well?
So I think I'm lucky in that respect. So I'm part of Elite Trail Team, and we're, I don't know how many runners we are now. I really should know, about 15 runners, all throughout the UK and Europe. And that is a community that I've got with me wherever I go. And I think they're kind of my core people that I go to with, because we're all pack animals. We all want to feel a part of that pack, and to know all those people who are going through the same things. Of some of them work full time, and it's being able to relate to them, and then them give me all the tips on how to have the lightest backpack you can possibly have when you do UTMB and all those sort of things. I think I'm very lucky because I know that I'll have that community with me wherever I go. Whereas I think if I didn't have that team, it would get, it's a lonely thing going into ultra running, particularly going into competitive ultra running. I'm very lucky that I've got a very supportive partner who will be with me at every single checkpoint. I don't think it's out of his choice, but he's put a ring on it now, so he kind of has to now. But if I didn't have that, you are training all the time. I'm obsessed with getting at least 8-9 hours sleep minimum every single night. So I don't see my friends as much. And that's the community that you kind of miss. And it's a balance of getting that right. But I think I'm going to ramble on if I say anything else.
Well, I'm conscious of time. We do want to take some audience questions. But just closing on community, Hugh, as a recovering roadrunner, do you feel like you've been welcomed into the ultra trail community, and how do you feel like that community differs from the road scene?
Yes, I do. I kind of have to say that, don't I? I definitely do feel like I've been welcomed in. I think every ultra race I've done, I've kind of struck up meaningful connections with other people that I'm running with. And that's definitely not been the case with road running. I think a big part of it is the kind of intensity that you're racing at. It kind of allows you to meet people and speak to people. So if you're doing like a 50-mile race or a 100-mile race, if you're not able to kind of have conversations with people, then you're probably going too hard. So even at the front of the pack, I found A lot of the time I've been racing, with other people and like having good conversations with people, and you kind of strike up like a meaningful connection, which, and even if it's not the case, often after the race, like the people you're finishing next to, you've got a lot more to talk about. It's like you've gone on a longer journey with like various different terrain. And, so I found like it's a much easier way to meet people and feel accepted. And I think, in road running, I don't think it's that people are any less friendly. I think it's just the sort of intensity that the races are run at. And I think the community in road running is much more based around clubs or like pre-existing friendships, rather than you don't tend to sort of, you maybe speak to people at the end of the race, but it'll more be a sort of a fleeting conversation, where in the races I've done, I found that the people I've met during the race and before or after, like often you exchange numbers, maybe go on like meet up for a run sometime, like sometimes it doesn't happen. But I think almost every race I've kind of, you know, if it's through WhatsApp or Instagram or something, you've got like a new connection, which you then maybe will see again. And I think that there seems like the community is much more around the race itself, where I think road running is a bit different to that.
And I think with trail running, the hardest part, and I don't know whether anyone else feels this, you have this amazing connection with someone that you've been running with, and you have that joke, and you get to the end, and then you see them the next day, and you're there like, who are you? Because they're wearing completely different clothes, and you only know that they're the really tired, raggedy-looking one with a buff and whatever, and it's... But it's that like special bond that you have with them, and then sometimes you just go on your merry way, but you know that you'll always have that weird connection because you both went through a tough time together.
Nicely put. Well, we've all been on a journey together this evening, so tying that up. But I'd love to open it up to audience questions. Remember, there's a trail skin multifunctional headwear. I've met the guy at Buff, and he's very keen on people not saying Buff unless it's an actual Buff. But they're trail skin multifunctional headwear for anyone who asks a question. Has anyone got a question? We've got a mic to get out to you so that it's recorded. Any questions? David Byrne, right at the back. Can we pass this back the room?
Hello, everybody. You are all very accomplished and talented runners. I'd like to know... how you feel about the kind of social media influencer runner. And I'm going to give an example. Like this week, Russ Cook, the hardest geezer, came out and said, he's going to do a 2:30 marathon, a 7:30 100K, and get into Team GB. So I'm kind of curious to know how you feel about the kind of, from what you guys do and your feeling about the social media runner.
I think he's got a shot, but maybe not in the time scale that he's... I saw that as well. I think the 100K time, I think he can get that maybe within a year. But yeah, jumping up from like a 2:50, jumping down from 2:50 marathon to 2:30, is like, it's not normal to be able to do that in, 6 months, as people know. You do see a lot of these runfluencers dropping times significantly, like at quite a rate though. And yeah, questions maybe have to be asked, I think, sometimes. But not saying that about him, though, for sure. It's interesting. It is like kind of a different... It's like you've got two different spheres, like people competing, like who are just purely from the athletic ability. And then you've got people on the other side. And then a lot of people's kind of like maybe a little bit in between. But yeah, it definitely raises some eyebrows when his claims come, yeah. Good luck to him.
There's a disconnect at the long stuff, right? Like, Hugh's spot on. Like, he's a capable guy. I mean, he's proved it. I think that 100K is the lowest hanging fruit there. It's not very low, but...
You love that.
Lowest hanging fruit. That 2:30 marathon might be more of a challenge, but the idea of that they just look at it on pay. They go, how can it take that? How can it be that hard to run 10K an hour, hours? I mean, that's really slow. And... It's just the disconnect there. That's where it goes from. Actually, you've probably got a chance to. You have no idea what you're talking about. I think the minute you step up off of 7 hours, where you're fueling off pure sugar and smoke, wing and a prayer stuff, it gets pretty serious pretty quickly after that. And that's where they come unstuck. They can't. Self-manage or be managed, for me anyway, past that point. When you start hitting 100 miles, we all know rapidly the sport goes off in a very different direction, and I think it's so easy to pluck numbers. I wish him the best. I mean, we need depth in the GB team, and he's a capable guy, but if those three targets, I say, is 2:45 24-hour, weirdly, is the one he'll struggle with the most.
And I think it's an element of sometimes the runfluencers, or whatever we call them, it stems from road running, because I've been asked the same thing. I did Julian Alps 124 kilometres, and someone asked, what was your pace? And I thought, that's a very weird question. Yeah. And I was like, it's like 8 minutes per kilometre. And they're like,
what?
And I thought, it was good. I did it.
Yeah.
And so there's that. It's a slight disconnect. But I think to a certain extent, I think it's great because they are getting people into trail running, which is pumping money into that industry, which will help fund athletes going to funding GB athletes, and all those. I think it can only benefit the sport because they're raising the sport as a whole.
Yeah, Finn on single tracks said something interesting last week. I listened to him and you, no one else.
You're talking to him next week, aren't
you? I am, yeah. But he was talking about the funnel into the sport, and Poppy's exactly right. If we're funneling more people in there, everything will get better as a result. And we won't be speaking in front of 50. We'll be speaking in front of 50,000. So where's the next venue?
You heard it here first.
Yeah, Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
You've got to dream big.
Yeah.
Great question, Dave. I'm going to throw you a multifunctional headwear. Anyone else got a question? Mr. Stokes, and then in the front as well.
Danny's fine. obviously, we've got a very, very young athlete. And so this question is for the three members of the panel that didn't have school today. Can any of you...
Which three do you mean?
Can any of you think of like an inflection point, and that could either be sort of as a competitive athlete or just within the sport at all? Is there? Can you think of a specific moment where a kind of, you know, a love for the sport or slash and a thought came into your head where is that where you thought I can take this further?
I suppose so. It's actually quite relevant. So I obviously have broken my leg, and I've had lots of time to myself to reflect on many things, and I think with that, I've reflected on actually the past training block, and the training block just before this was the best ever. I felt amazing. And I think by having that reflection point, it made me realise how much more I've got to give. I feel like I've only just scraped the surface of where I am. And I think it's important to reflect on all the races. Every race that I do, me and my coach, we sit down and say, what did we did well? Okay, that's great. What did we not do well? Let's learn on that and move on to the next time. So I think going into, I suppose I'm slightly going off topic, but I'm going into every race wanting to learn more just makes you better at it, and also gives you a bit of a boost when you think of the good stuff that you've done.
You know, for me, I think it's quite a kind of an overnight thing, really. My first like longer ultra over 50k was the South Downs Way 2024, so 18 months ago or so, and I just kind of shocked myself. Like, I didn't know, I got maybe 2 or 3 hours better than I thought I was gonna do, ended up finishing second, and I discovered I had a talent for that kind of event and that kind of time and distance, which I wouldn't have known if I didn't try. I think rightfully so, people generally like will build up in distance, and maybe they'll do like a 50k, 50 mile, 100 mile over a few years. I didn't do that. I just went head in and it worked out. So there's something to be said for just trying something and seeing how it goes. But yeah, for me, it was very much like, oh, wow, I've kind of done this without, you know, training in a specific way for this event. And then from then I thought, okay, I can take this further, and started taking it a bit more seriously.
I'll add to it only to say that I'm so impressed with you, Marius. I could no way at your age have sat there and spoken so articulately in front of a big group of, I mean, fair play. It makes me think we're in very good hands with the trail running in the future. But I think there are some very inspirational people in our sport who are very good ambassadors and talk a really good balance of how to get the most out of their running, which really should always come back to happiness and enjoyment. If you're not enjoying your running, you're not doing it right. You've got to take a step back. And for me, it was a runner called Anton Krupicka in 2007-2008. He had a blog, something you don't really see that much of now. It's sort of coming back a bit with Substack and that, but he just ran in the mountains all the time. No kit, no fuss, kept it super minimal, and was just purely for the love of it. And that really sort of, even now, still inspires me. We've been lucky enough to meet him several times over the years, and he's still the same guy. He just does it for the love of it. So my only words of wisdom, really, are just always have that at the heart of everything. And if you get, you know, you feel like you're forcing it, you're doing races, you're not really feeling the love for, the community's not there, take a step back, run for you, and then find the love for it again, really.
Thank you.
Time for one more question. Do you want to pass it to the lady in the front here? She had a hand up before.
I kind of wanted to bounce a bit off the first question with like social media and community and everything around that. In the road running sphere, there have kind of been divisions that have come up which have undermined sort of the community in the road running space. As trail running participation increases so much, what can sort of leaders of the sport like yourselves do, and what can the sport more generally do to try and stop those divisions from coming up in trail running?
I'm intrigued. What? So how has this division started? I've not heard of this.
Things between, on like mostly on social media, I think, but sort of endlessly coming at each other for pace. The Strava police checking elapsed time.
There's an Instagram account called Official Unofficial Time that basically tracks down runfluencers and identifies the ones who have posted their moving time rather than their elapsed time. Or who have stopped their watch when their watch says they've done the marathon rather than when the course ends. And like publishes like 10 slide carousels about what they've done. It's absolutely brilliant.
There's a lot. And also stuff like people coming at slower runners for wearing a running vest on a 5K, being like, why do you need to wear a running vest? Just hold your phone, don't leave your phone at home, those kinds of things. Endless things. People will find anything to pick up on and argue about in a way that you wouldn't expect from a community which is normally so welcoming and inclusive and, yeah, fantastic for everyone. And as well, almost a divide between kind of like old school road runners that think that things should be done a certain way and front lines should look like people in singlets and not much else. And then, yeah, kind of newer people coming into the running space that might be much, much slower doing sort of 6, 7, 8 hour marathons, which is much more normal in a trail space. But yeah, I guess that's what I want to hear. How do you guys think that the trail running world can be different from the road running world?
Marius, are you on social media? Do you worry about social media's influence on your running in that regard?
No, I don't actually. Although I do. I got school one morning, and then Sir Mr. Stokes took a video of us coming in. When I go to lesson, and then one of my friends like, I saw you on TikTok. So and so was like, what? When? Show me. And that was me at like at Chris 7 o'clock in the morning, just woken up, and I was like, oh yeah.
Bobby, do you to the questioner's point? Do you feel that social media is a good sort of ingredient to add to your mix as an athlete, or do you find it as a potentially divisive thing?
I think personally it's really good as a personal brand to be able to aid with sponsorship and everything like that. I think social media is important and it helps, but I think there's obviously this negative side of social media and of these groups, and I think that's just such a shame. I do doom scroll, but I don't spend enough to understand those sort of areas. And thankfully, I don't think in trail running there is that stigma of what pace is, given that that person asked me what the pace is, and I thought that's such a strange question. I don't know what I suppose trail running can do. I think trail running is a very inclusive sport. I might be being very naive, but I think it welcomes every person from if you want to go out and do the course record, if you just want to go out and have fun and just explore the trails. But I think I've lost my train of thought now.
I know Hugh's not a huge social media fan. We, maybe because I'm just old, but I'm not that old. But we've seen this come in cycles. So, you know, there was the whole barefoot running thing. Yeah, everyone's wearing Vibram Five Fingers. We're asked, people are coming over the line wearing Lunar sandals, asking if they're the first person to finish in sandals out of one, you know. But it's a phase. And then it was the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And there's always a group within a group looking for that extra bit of attention, kudos, whatever. And with obviously social media, that's heightened because there's livings to be made from it. There's a lot at stake. I think we're just going through the latest iteration of that. I think it will inevitably cycle and there'll be real lulls in it, but I think if we use trail running as a guidepost generally, it's a pretty great one. It's so inclusive. It really works hard to be inclusive and very welcoming environment. And I think anybody who stumbles onto the trail scene, whether it's at Maverick or with us or, you know, grassroots level races, gets a feel for it. I mean, not everywhere, but generally the feel is amazing. And I think everyone could use a little more trail in their lives. These people sort of cutting courses and, you know, taking moving time on Strava and stuff, it's just, it's a bit sad, you know. And I understand why people pull up on it, because people have legitimately worked hard for their, you know, their goals and their achievements and stuff. And I have seen some of those videos. I find them a bit disappointing. But I think it will cycle back out again. We'll always have that. And it will just be the next thing, won't it? I'm not sure what it is yet. But come and run the trail. It's not like that.
I've got a few questions that came on Instagram that I just want to get quick answers to so that the people who ask them feel satisfied. So Callaghan asked, and I just want a single word answer to this. How low can the 100-mile world record go? And for context, Alexander Sorokin, 10:51, and Katrina Jennings last year, 12:37 for the women. James, how low can it go?
Within what time frame? Ever?
Yeah, what do you think? How low could we go?
9:45. Women's 11 hours.
Nice. Hugh, as someone who's spent a lot of time running 100 miles very fast?
I don't think you'll see below 10.
In our lifetime, whatever.
Yeah, in our lifetime. Low 10 hours, I'd say. Yeah.
On the women's front? Poppy, on the women's front, what do you think?
I would be plucking a number out of thin air, and I'm just going to go with 11 hours.
Nice. Go on, Maris.
I think...
How fast?
Trail running is such a big growing sport that I don't really know the time, so I don't really like watch documentaries about 100 milers in terms of like road. I feel like surely it's got to be broken, because everyone's getting faster, everything's getting better. So within the next 5 years, something's got to be broken, surely.
Yeah.
So you're telling us you're going to break the next record?
Come on. Give it 10 years. And we had one other question, which is from Alex Does Ultra Stuff. And he said, is it possible, this is really pertinent actually to our panel, is it possible to be a top level ultra runner and hold down a full-time job? Poppy and Hugh.
Well, I have a full-time job, so whether that declares that I'm not a full-time ultra runner. it's really, really hard. I am working towards not being full-time because I would like to see my friends and walk my dog and rest. But it's very, very, very hard. I don't think it's sustainable, and I'm really sorry if anyone from work is listening to this. Do not share too much on LinkedIn. but it's really, really hard. And hopefully only the next few years, and then I can be off on my merry way, resting in Chamonix.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I meet either of those categories at the moment. Top level ultra runner and I currently don't have a job, but I'm going to be starting one soon, hopefully. So in the next couple of weeks. Yeah. I'm kind of in between jobs. But I've actually found a period of not working, like left my job like last summer and just about to start another one. I think I kind of thought before I was going to, oh, I'd love this. I can train really hard and I really enjoy it. But I actually found it, I didn't really do any more than what I was doing when I was working. Partly because I think my training was all built around my routine of going to work, commuting in, running with friends at work and stuff. So I felt like I haven't maybe seen, I'm not sure if it would be for me, like a full-time thing. But I think definitely like reduced work to maybe like part-time, that could be potentially viable. But for me, I'm just doing it for fun.
Yeah. I think also, I know you probably want to have short answers, but with, I know that, so Chris Jones, I've spoken to him a couple of times about, he's still got not a full-time job, but a part-time job. And I was asking, well, you can very well, if you want to, go full-time because he's incredible at what he does. But it's that pressure, right? If that's your full-time job, if you're injured, you think, well, this is how I make my money. How am I going to make my money? And then the enjoyment of the race, obviously that's the why we kind of started doing it. You enjoy it, and that pressure suddenly takes away that enjoyment, and then you might not do as well, and it just kind of can snowball. So sometimes actually going to a part-time job allows you to do the thing that you love, but also allows you to have that money still coming in and without the pressure.
Maris, you ever going to get a job, or are you going to be pro trail runner from day one?
No clue. What I can say is that I feel like no offense to you guys, but it's hard to say, because if you're, I don't think you're able, you're not able to balance a job and manage to be like really elite runner like Courtney DeWalter, Tom Evans, all of these guys. But then I feel like it's possible to be like, you know, like a bit set down, like you're still getting on the like top 10s in major races and still like have a full-time job or a part-time job.
Well, Rod Farber came second to Western States with a full-time job. So
I think Caleb Olsen as well, I think.
Yeah. So we can agree it depends is the actual answer. I do, the only contribution I have is that recovery. That is where you're making the gains in the sport. And if you don't have to go and do a job, or you can sit at home, you know, work around, flexible schedule, you're at a big advantage on the recovery stakes, that's for sure.
I should add, Rod Farber did quit his job when he won, came second at Western States. So
yeah.
We are out of time, so I just want to take a moment to thank all of our panel, our amazing panel, Marius, Poppy, Hugh and James. Give it a round of applause for these guys. On the way out, please do grab yourself a trail. We've got Dave from Trailskin here, and you help yourself to one product.
Not anything in the box.
All right, if it's not in a box, you can have it. But thank you so much to Trailskin. Thank you so much to Janji. We've got Jack from Janji here as well. And to Petzl, we've got to give this to the best question, which I think was this last question. So congratulations. There's a head torch for you. Thanks so much, everyone. That's us. Thank you.